You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Alquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Welcome once again to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. Tommy Alquist, Kevin Miller, and Tommy, we've got some entertainment today.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I can't wait. Some of the guests we have come in, we know really well and know the story. And some we don't, and I don't know the whole story. So we have the founders of the Treefort Music Fest here today, and we're going to let them introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about each of you and how long you've been here in Idaho and a little bit about what you do with your day jobs, because I know you have day jobs. And then we'll get into why and how and letting our listeners know a little bit more about this incredible blessing and heritage we have here of music in Boise. So, Lori, let's start with you.
My name is Lori Chandra Uten, and I didn't grow up here, but my late husband grew up here. And so I moved here almost 20 years ago with him and never looked back. And especially after living in bigger cities up the West Coast, this just seemed like the place that I wanted to land and stay. But about almost 10 years ago, I met Drew Lorona, and we started talking about the lack of the certain kind of venue here for the kind of artists that we wanted to see come through on a more regular basis. And from there, he wrote a business plan, and that's kind of how it all started with us. But before that, and still, I'm a recovering CPA, and and for the last 18 years, I've been a insurance and benefits broker. And so that's what I still do today. And that's my, my real day job. And I'd say that Treefort is a great hobby job. So I've been doing that for the last 8 or 9 years together.
My name is Eric Gilbert. I grew up in West Boise, which is Centennial High School. Went up to the University of Idaho to pursue a family tradition of engineering. And before long, ended up following my love for music a little bit more, and studying music, and then starting a band with my wife called Finn Riggins. And after we left Moscow, we basically lived in a van for 4 years, touring the country pretty thoroughly as that band, and just kind of carving our way through the jungle of America and visiting it and really connecting with all these communities on a level as musicians, kind of like an old folk tradition, even though we were a rock band. And then we were on a label out of Portland and were kind of enticed to move over to Portland, but I just really like Idaho so much in my blood, and like the clean water and the clear skies, and really wanted to figure out a way to be an artist here in Boise, especially once I moved back and kind of rediscovered the downtown core of Boise. Really fell in love with the community here and was trying to kind of make ways and help other artists and still touring. That's when I met Drew and Lori, who were had a kind of a convergence as they were starting to think about how to get involved in the music scene. And I was pretty active helping all these bands. And so that sort of, collision led to us deciding to put on a music festival that was kind of multi-venue, focused on emerging acts to really start showcasing what Boise had to offer the touring scene, but also for the artists that are living here and trying to figure out how to make a living from here without having to move elsewhere. So happy to be here.
My name's Drew Lorona. I moved to Boise when I was a teenager. And then I went away to college and was working in New Zealand actually after college, and I really didn't intend to come back to Boise, but I got my heart broken in New Zealand and ran out of money, and all of a sudden coming back wasn't such a terrible proposition. And I had a couple of friends from college who were keen on moving to Boise, and so they called me. They said, hey, we need a roommate. So I packed my bags, flew back to the States, and sort of reestablished myself here in town, having grown up here and thinking Boise's lame. I'm never going to live in Boise. But all of a sudden I came back and I got a house in the North End when you could still rent a house in the North End when you were 22. But it just sort of made me look at Boise in a different way. Started working downtown, started meeting people. And I was always attached to music through college. I was a DJ at the radio station that my school had, and was on the committee for bringing bands to campus. And so I had always sort of cultivated this hobby and this interest in music, and especially like independent and sort of up and coming music. And so I met Lori and eventually met Eric. And through that process of just sort of walking through every door as it opened, we're here now 8+ years later with a music festival that is, you know, a pretty outstanding product, especially when you look at it compared to how most other festivals that are still around after 8 or 9 years are doing business. So it's something I'm really proud of.
So a guilty confession here on my part. So my oldest two kids are absolute music junkies. My oldest son, Thomas, when he was a teenager, I would drive him all over everywhere to go to like these obscure bands. He's just that's just his thing. And he still lives in Salt Lake now, but he does a lot of music. So I'm getting some serious points today having you guys on. So I told him today he was coming in, and he was just fascinated because he's just loved it so much. So I think it's provided a great opportunity for Idaho kids and just the importance of music. And I look at their lives, like my kids, and both of them are very musical. He became a jazz guitarist. My daughter's a vocalist, and music's been just a huge part of their life. But I'm intrigued to ask you a couple questions. I don't know what the answer will be. And one is getting back to kind of how you started this. To me, I always love talking to people that have created something and saying, okay, someone had this crazy idea, but it has to also be, it has to make it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's lots of crazy ideas out there, like, hey, let's do a big music festival in Boise. But then I'd love to hear the business plan. I'd love to hear, because I think people out there listening to this, it's Inspire Excellence podcast, they see their life, they want to make a difference, they want to do something. But to hear from people that have done it, I'd love to hear a little bit about the struggles, how hard it was, because you have the idea, but it's just, things never go as planned. It's always harder than you think. How you got through that and how you've been able to stay focused on some a product now that I think is, I mean, this is one of the premier festivals for sure in the Northwest. It's notoriety, and now everyone just sees that. But I'd love to hear the story behind the story. And then if you could also comment a little bit about the importance of music, the importance mm-hmm. of art, the importance of up-and-coming artists, because that's what I love about what you do. You give this opportunity that's really pretty unique. So kind of a two-part question.
There was a lot of question in that question.
Sorry.
I think, maybe it's just from the way I hear things from is what I heard you asking is how do you take something that, and one thing I think a lot of people think is that just because Tree Fort is fun and everyone has a good time and there's beer that it must be making money hand over fist and it's easy. But I think one of the benefits that I had coming into this was the fact that I spent the last 20 years either as a tax CPA or as a benefits consultant, working with small business owners and seeing their struggles and seeing them come and go and talking to them about what their biggest challenges were. And so from a math, I guess, a strictly how do we do this perspective, I learned a lot of lessons that way. One of my clients was the Boise River Festival, and they talked a lot about the fact that, if you're too much based in giving, especially from one entity, then if it's not balanced, then it's you're really putting yourself in the way of a lot of risk. So we really tried to build a really strong basis, operating basis, as far as at some point we want to make sure that operating income pays for operating expenses, and we don't rely too heavily on sponsorship so that it changes the culture of our festival if we lose one of those legs in our tripod. And I think through just shared values, we've really focused on sticking to that. And that, I think, has really allowed us to stick to our own values, because they can't be swayed too much by the wants or needs of somebody who wants to come in and affect the festival through sponsorship. But I've been really proud to work with this team on the nuts and bolts of that, but also saying, we can wait, because it's really hard to get someone to, or a company to put their money behind something or their brand on something if they're the first ones. We also didn't want to get too far down the road taking what people do for a living for free or for less, because, you know, at some point that burns people out. So we've really, I think to me, the part that I'm proud of is that our goal has been to pay people what they do for a living, what they charge to do for a living. There are lots of volunteers and people who want to give their time and what they do for a living, but the people who work on it, we do our best to make sure that they can get to a point where, you know, this is sustainable living for them so that nobody burns out on it and everything is balanced. I think to me, that's been the good work that we've done that has really kept the whole community involved and balanced and sustainable.
I think something that helped too was one that we were all from Boise and we sort of knew what the market could handle. We didn't come in saying we're going to kill Coachella and put on a festival in Boise. You know, we had a modest amount of money and we had modest ambitions and we sort of, our goal was to see what we could accomplish given our limitations rather than, go out there and try to raise a bunch of money and make a bunch of promises and throw this big thing that the community couldn't sustain. And so I think as a result, as Boise has sort of boomed and blossomed into this super desirable place for live and work, Treefort has grown along. Treefort sort of copied that growth. We didn't try to do something that outpaced what the community could really tolerate. And so as a result, you know, as the festival grows and our, you know, we do increase our partnerships with businesses, but most of them are local businesses and most of them want to invest in the community. So it sort of allowed us to naturally kind of expand. And I think that is just a product of like us knowing where we are and living. When we started the festival, we were all kind of solidly in the core demographic of who we expected to attend the festival. And so we could sit there and go, well, I can't afford a $500 festival pass. So what can we afford? Well, probably this price. And what should beer be priced at? Well, it's this much down the street at the brewery. So let's make beer that price. And so we just built everything from ticket pricing to booking and based on like what was the region doing and what was the town doing. And so it made it, as crazy of a plan as it was at the beginning, it made it really easy to make decisions as we grew, because we just sort of looked around us and went, well, beer's a little bit more expensive in town now, so maybe the community can tolerate that. And so we can raise prices and that'll help us out a little bit on the overhead. And so it made it simple to navigate growth because we were growing within the community that we were part of.
I think a lot of the strength came from be able to take those approaches from this kind of this core approach that we talked about really early on, that sort of like our marketing approach was going to be a pull marketing campaign, in the sense that let's just make, and since we were all kind of music lovers and had, you know, some of the music community involved, is like, just make a pure product that we know that our community wants really badly. And we can, you know, and so there was just, and then we just trusted there was enough others like us that people were going to want to come. And so from the get-go, it was a very artist centric approach. You know, it's like, what, you know, knowing what I knew and knowing what we knew as people that also like, you know, artists, what would artists want from a music festival? What's missing right now? And how do we service their needs, both the ones locally, but also these touring acts that are trying to tour the West with these long drives, you know, and especially during that time of year, there's high traffic. So we really like built this, you know, it was driven by this trying to solve a very clear issue, one of which that most people didn't think of Boise as a music town, even though there's a lot of music here. And thus a lot of the bands were just stopping here and not playing or a variety of things. The other thing is locally, the locals felt like they couldn't get any attention unless they left. So, you know, we were sort of really like, so kind of the concept was like, let's bring in this talent, show them how great Boise is, and let's thus help build a national stage for local artists here. And so from that core approach, you know, everything like, yeah, let's spend a little bit more money and make sure the bands are taken really well care of. Let's put them up in rooms and let's make sure sound is the best it can possibly be, you know. And what that has led to is all the artists that play constantly tell all their friends that you have to play this festival. Like, it's one of the best experiences that we've had. And like what Lori was alluding to, since we weren't putting big Coca-Cola banners, no offense to Coca-Cola, my mom loves Coca-Cola, but or anything else on the stages, a lot of the artists, you know, they really felt really like it was there was an authenticity to it that they were starting to lack in a lot of the festival culture. So that sort of just gave us this sort of pull strength of people wanting to be a part of it. And then also the community itself was just, you know, I really gravitated toward it when we started it, because it was something that hadn't happened here before, but a lot of people have been traveling to Sasquatch or other places, so they're familiar with what they maybe would want to see here. So that's some of the core. And I'm going to answer your why music can't question. For me, music is one of the most accessible mediums, art forms for a lot of people. A lot of people in enjoy it, but also I think there's something very entrepreneurial about the rock and roll scene, and it really frees when people just kind of put themselves out there in some way, like put themselves on stage. I think it's a great metaphor for just taking chances in life in general. And like a lot of people that get into band culture, it is like you're like a small business and you have to figure out how to survive and do all these things. But then it also just has, and so what we've seen is the festival has grown with these other forts. So there's all these other, the creative economy in general just was lacking a super healthy ecosystem here for a while. And I think what we've seen is with Treefort, through the mechanics of building a music festival, we created this temporary ecosystem for creatives to bring ideas to the table and just try things. And we've built an audience for them. And so I think I just really believe in music's ability to entertain, yes, but also give people pathways to exercise their innovation and then I just think it just makes things more fun. So,
Eric, so I know you're musical, you're in a band. What did were you a singer? What did you play?
I play keyboards, helped write the songs, and sang. Yeah. My wife sings a lot better. I just kind of yell along and kind of make her
to harmonize
too good. She harmonizes.
Drew, are you musical? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, love music or?
Yeah, just an appreciate. I played music when I was younger, but I have since stopped. So.
And Lori?
Yeah, I played music until somewhere in college, and then it just switched.
What did you play?
I played the saxophone.
Saxophone.
So I still have it, but
weren't you a drum major?
Oh yeah, but that doesn't actually involve drumming. So.
No, but it's leading the whole band.
I know. They said we need a drum major, and I didn't realize that took all the fun out of it when you become in charge of something. But.
Where did the name come from?
So the name was, we were in a brainstorm session. It actually came together pretty fast, but one of which we already had the artist in mind we wanted to work with was James Lloyd, and he has this very playful illustration style. And so we were looking for something playful. And when through the brainstorm session, when Treefort kind of was on the table, it resonated really quickly with all of us because we're like, whoa, yeah. And we looked, there wasn't anything else music related tied to it.
Who said the name the first time?
I think I technically did because I grew up with a Treefort in my backyard. So I think I was visiting my mom. I'm like, Treefort. You know, it's like,
I always love hearing those stories. Yeah, they're sometimes good and sometimes just like weird like that.
But. I think it fits, obviously, the cliche because it is the city of trees, but I just, initially when he said it, I just love the image of, everyone in the community coming together to play and be creative and do whatever they wanted in a tree fort. So like you did when you were a kid.
I've named bands, several bands in the past. It's always very laborious, takes a lot of time. I remember it happened pretty quickly. Like as soon as it just sort of like, that's it. And that works.
Guys, we always talk to entrepreneurs of various incarnations, but to visualize something and then to actually put the paper and the pen and the business plan. What was year one like? Were there doubts, and how much of your own personal resources have you put into this thing?
I think from a what was it like perspective, I remember during year one and year two feeling like amazed at how everything was going, just because the people that came out of the community to provide every time we needed something, we need someone who's an expert in this. Can you, who can handle that? And there was just always someone in the community that gave of their time, and they were so enthusiastic and willing. But I remember thinking, this is the fun part, you know, before people start telling you what you can't do. I mean, there was plenty of that, but as far as just it being original and new, that was probably the most fun. I would say that we all put in many, many hours that I don't know if I could come up with that level of energy to push that boulder up the hill again. Financially, it took a lot of my resources. Everyone worked on as little as they could through those first couple of years. And, I did my best to make it so that they could do that, you know, that they could get through that, the people that are working on the festival year round. But,
I think we had the general idea, but the mechanics of making it work were still kind of, so because we work with so many different partners downtown, a lot of it was who was willing to work with us, be it a venue wise or the parking lot that we're in now. And so I think throughout building the festival, even to where it is now, it's like, we've been pretty like nimble around, you know, we had a general idea of what we wanted to feel like, but then we've been responsive to, how it comes to be based on who is willing to help us and who, you know, what sort of spaces we had to work with. So I think we've been,
it turns out you can get really great deals when you don't have any money and just tell people that. So yeah, kind of like what Eric said, we knew what we wanted to accomplish and we had limited resources to do so. And we just got lucky in that a lot of people could see the vision and we're like, hey, yeah, let's see what we can accomplish and go from there.
I think so. We originally, it was going to be 3 days, maybe 2 days and like 70 bands, but the response right off the bat from bands and the community, even that first year was four days the first year and
170
bands. So it, I remember at one point turning to Lori after I went to a smaller film festival, I was like, I think we should just really scale it down. And Lori's like, no, we're going to do this. Let's let it go. And I was like, all right. It's like, so, and it was pretty interesting to, you know, so we weren't sure of the scale that we were even trying to accomplish. And we sort of responded to the
sure, scale. I mean, that's a lot of overhead. That's, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of, if this thing's going to fly, mm-hmm. logistics and, mm-hmm. you know, it's you three, you know, everybody's ready to go until they pull out the credit card. And then, you know, then you got the balance and everything else. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people that have never been through what you three have been through don't understand the commitment by faith that you all three have had. And then you have all these people coming, where are you going to house them?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's
a bit of
self-induced insanity in that process. But as far as putting faith in and feeling like, I think every step of the way from when Drew and I started working together, I'd said to myself, okay, I draw a line. This is as far as I'm willing to go. And then we'll reevaluate. And it always seemed very natural and a clear yes to take the next step. But that's kind of where I felt like for a long time I was drawing lines, like we're going to go to here and then we're going to reevaluate and we're going to talk and we're going to see what we've gotten, what we've built, what the opportunities are, where it seems like this community wants to go. But I think it was just step by step. It just seemed very clear that the community wanted to come together and at some point we became just followers of what the community wanted.
I was going to say too, like, I think that first year we were pretty undersold coming up to the first day. I think, you know, we were still just like operating under faith, but I remember the first show. And in fact, since we didn't want to ask anyone else to play first. My band actually played first at like 6 PM on a Thursday or something. I remember it wasn't until then all of a sudden the venue filled up that early. And I think we were all like, oh, maybe this is going to work. So the faith and I think we ended up doubling our sales during the festival or something. Mm-hmm. But up until then it was looking, everyone was excited, but no one was like showing up buying tickets. So
anyway, was there a moment during all this, sometimes there are times where you're just like, you had to push through, or you just like said, is this worth it?
Can totally. You
describe one of those mm-hmm. for us?
Well, I mean, we often like Lori was describing, you know, Lori invested a lot of her resources. Eric and I and the rest of the team put a lot of sweat equity into it. And you don't, like, I didn't wake up one day going, I'm going to spend the next 8 years of my life building this music festival. So you sort of have these check-in moments where, at least I did, where I'm like, am I pursuing my goals? Am I pursuing my dreams? I can't tell yet. you know? And so a lot of it was just, is this investment of my time in my 20s and 30s when I could be doing something else? Like, is this what I want to be doing? And just constantly doing that check-in. And that self-doubt comes in when you're like, yeah, we had, you know, the ticket sales aren't rolling in. And you sit there and you go, are people seeing this the way we see it still? And then we have these waves of success. And, you know, inevitably when the festival happens and we see the people, and that's sort of the peak of like, yes, it's all worth it. Absolutely. Every bit of it, the lack of sleep and the 16-hour days and like all of it's worth it then. And it's just like the chaos, you know, I've developed this insane ability to like manage uncertainty and chaos as a result, because it's like you flow with like the doubt is part of what makes you like ante up again every year. And I think a lot of other passions and careers, people don't have that check-in moment. They just punch the clock every day for 20 years and are never forced on like an annual or even monthly basis to go, do I still want to do this? Is this still fulfilling? Is this still creating dividends for me, either financially or, you know, spiritually? And so it's good. Like it forces you to go back and go, hey,
When you felt that too, it's gotta be tremendously rewarding now to feel momentum, because I'm guessing now, when these years come up for bands signing up or just processes now that you've worked out that are better, how is it now? And tell us a little bit about the health of the festival now and what you're seeing for this year and kind of who's coming and what are the trends that you see now that you have some momentum because of all the hard work?
Well, I think one of the things, there's a lot of things that become easier because of the momentum, but as with anything, when it grows, it's just got new challenges. So, you know, I think everyone keeps saying, it's got to be easy now. It's just different challenges. But I think the health of the festival it feels good. Like, I feel like our team is like, there is a lot of like, there's now like, there's a little more of institutional intelligence. Like, we kind of know some of what we're doing, but there's a lot of still constant change because we are working with so many different partners in downtown. You know, if we were just on a big open field and we had full control of just that property, it would be a lot different than, you know, so we're constantly tackling that. But, we've been pretty good. We're pretty good at rolling with the punches and handling the doubt and the uncertainty, I guess. So, ticket sale, you know, I think we're seeing a lot more press from out of the area come. And so there's a lot of these positives of that. And the bands we have an open submission process, and well over 2,500 bands from all over the world submit. And then separately, there's all the bigger bands all have agents that are submitting, you know, so there's a ton of interest in coming to play the festival. And a lot of people are, you know, we become kind of a tastemaker festival that a lot of bands is where they can get discovered, and both by the local community, but others, and a lot of them want to come back every year. So there's a lot of those positives, but team itself is good.
With 2,500 bands, tell us about the selection process. I mean, that just hit me that you've got more. So how do you go about that? How do you select it? Where do you cap it now?
Well, we have an artist committee for one, and they all kind of help vote on things. We sort through it all. We have a couple different artist committees, but then, so it is a lot to sort through. And then we don't necessarily have a cap on number of bands. We're trying not to exceed this 450 number we've been hovering around and potentially going down, because a lot more of the bands want to stay for more of the week. So some of them are playing multiple times now and stuff. So trying to maybe keep it right around 400. So, which is plenty of bands as
where do you put all those
bands? I know. And that's what's crazy is like our attendees are also a lot of the bands. So that's why there's a lot of these folks. But at peak on Saturday night, we have about 25 active stages. So with all the different venues that are already happening, in addition to the outdoor main stage that we build on a parking lot. So, and this year you were asking, like, we had like Liz Phair, who was like pretty big in the 90s, and she's revisiting that. We have Angelique Kidjo is coming out, and she's I think she's been most recently lives in New York, but she's originally from Africa and spent time in France and kind of an Afrobeat band, but she's doing a re-envisioning of the Talking Heads' Remain in Light. And it's a great up and coming artist called Toro y Moi is one of our bigger names. And we do have bands from all over the world and all different styles too. I think people that haven't been before, because we generally talk about it is a festival of discovery. You're not expected to know the names on the festival. You're supposed to promise us these are good acts. And you know, we've had a lot of bigger acts that played Tree Fort now are much bigger now, but you could have seen them in a small space back in the day. And so there really truly is something for everyone. Come and just be willing to wander in and check some things out.
Yep. I think that the festival itself, I just got an amazing team, and the process is I'm just amazed at everything that gets done. I think that part seems to be getting getting easier every year, as far as once the festival season, I would say in September, October, when things just start to move. I think the hardest parts, and from my perspective, the hardest time of year is the summer. Every year we take a look at the team, like Drew said, and it's like, what are we doing? And what needs to change, and what happened, and where have we come, and what do we need to address? What are, you know, the big heady topics, like, you know, the self-check-ins and the, making sure that everyone on the team is getting what they need. And do we have to develop, policies? Do we have to develop procedures? How do we, you know, to me, that those are the heavy lifting topics that we handle over the summer. Because if we don't, then we can't move forward as a cohesive team. And I feel like we've done a good job of working to stay honest with ourselves and with each other so that we can continue to move forward with everybody being invested. Because once the festival kicks into gear, when people start doing their jobs, everyone is just really good at working together. And these teams that work together are really incredible. When you talk about what inspires me, that's what I see happen every year. And I just can't believe it.
Can you, we're kind of winding down here. Tell us a little more about just this year's festival, just for people listening out there, dates, tickets, a little more that you'd want to get out there to the Treasure Valley.
So it happens March 20th through 24th. It is a 5-day event all throughout the downtown core. It's all very walkable. One thing, we just touched on the music, but there's a lot more than music. There is a 5-day pass that you can purchase to get you into everything. But there are opportunities to, there's like things like Story Fort and Kid Fort and Ale Fort, which is a beer tasting event that you don't need a pass to come down and take part in. There's a tech component, and Drew can talk some more about that, and Yoga Fort.
Yeah, we've got, as Eric was sort of mentioning, we have all these ancillary forts that are designed to, you know, we initially set out to sort of cure the angst we had about the music scene in Boise, and after that got underway, we had people from other sort of cultural and artistic branches come to us and go, well, we should get more writers and poets here, and we should get, you know, the tech community needs more cohesive community. And so all these other forts like Hack Fort and Skate Fort and Yoga Fort popped up as a arm of accomplishing that goal, which is Boise needs more gravity for these cultural and artistic outlets so that people see that we have our own take on these things to offer. And so it's been really cool to see and sort of grow with all these forts. And like Eric was saying, a bunch of them are free. Like there's a whole catchphrase called Free Fort, which is every single event and activity that people can do to sort of just come down and check it out. Like that is the best way we have of selling tickets, is people come down, they don't really know what to expect, and just experience everything that we just offer up as like, hey, try it out, test it out. And inevitably we convert them into a 5-day pass holder because they want to do more. They want to go to more shows, not just the free second chance shows at Bitter Creek or at Pre-Funk. So it sort of snowballs. You get sucked into the gravity, because once you're down there, I mean, if you've been down to Tree Fort, it makes Boise feel like a very different place than it feels. But
I've
heard
a couple
times
before,
a year,
but how many people in the week?
About 20. We had like 24,000 last year.
Wow,
it's a big deal.
Yeah. And what we like to tout too is, unlike a lot of other events, like there are a lot of events that say we bring this many people to Boise, or we bring this many people to wherever. Like Treefort's a 5-day event, so these people are coming down every day, experiencing the event every day. So it's a little more participatory, and there's a little more of a buy-in than if you just go downtown for 3 or 4 hours, do the big event, you know, see the sponsor banners and then disappear and that's it. And you hope you made your impact. Then, you know, we get this community at Treefort where people start to, you know, you start to bump into the same people day after day. And after a while you sort of get this camaraderie and you sort of get, it's just a really cool thing to see happen just from a community standpoint. You know, people standing and having conversations on a street corner that just bump into each other and like each other's t-shirt. You know, it's a cool thing to see.
Yeah. One thing I'll say, most days it starts around noon and goes all the way till 2 a.m. So there's like a lot of different time options you can take in. So.
One thing I hear a lot from people that haven't been is that it seems overwhelming to them. And I think that I can imagine that, but there, when you say that Treefort is for everyone, there really is something for everyone down there, and it's really accessible. We try really hard to make sure that anybody can afford to go to some part or all of Treefort. We have over 800 volunteers, and that's one way to get your pass as well as have a good time being involved in the festival. Because over 5 days, if you do your bit of volunteering, not only is it fun, it's you're part of that community. So it's really a community built event. And I really think that there is something for everyone to be interested in it, but there's also a way for anybody to access being a part of or attending the festival, because there's, you can walk up and pay at the door, or you can volunteer and get a 5-day pass, or you can just show up, buy the full 5-day pass and go to everything. So I think if people look a little bit into the details, they'll realize there's lots of different ways they can participate and attend. And it's, while it may be overwhelming, it's meant to be accessible.
Sure. And finally, quickly, guys, what inspires you?
Over the years, I've learned that I'm inspired by people. You know, they ask you when you're a kid, what you think your career should be? And they give you those tests and it comes out to be something, I don't know, like a job, doing a thing. But I've realized over the years that it doesn't matter what I'm doing. If what I'm inspired by are the people that I get to meet and see what they can accomplish and what they dream of and how they get there. And I feel so lucky to just be drug along by this team of people and continue to be a part of what they create and how they do it. So
semi-similarly, I'm really inspired by people that, you know, more and more so being a facilitator of that, letting people really try to be the person or do what they really want to do most in life. And I think, like, you know, for me, that can be anything from a young artist deciding they really want to play music on a stage one time, or even a lot of the people that work on our team. Yeah. Just being able to, hey, I've always wanted to kind of lead a project of some sort, and so it's really fulfilling to me and inspires me daily. You know, music is an inspiration to me, but just similarly, like just watching people within my community and broader community really, really contribute themselves in meaningful ways and in ways that really fulfill them in their own lives. So
I read a lot. And so I inevitably find myself inspired by like great writing and quotes. And so often, like when I don't have a way of articulating how I feel or a way of motivating myself, I'll often just like go look up what Mark Twain said about something and go like, that's a really good way of putting it. And so inevitably that becomes my like compass, is like there was a smarter person who's either alive or lived before me, who's already thought about this, and I'm just going to go see what they have to say.
Well, I thanks for being on today. I think this is exactly the kind of stories we want to get out. And I think it's terribly important for us to just constantly have communities that care about each other and do things for community. And I think you're a great example of that here. So we appreciate you. Thanks for coming on, and can't wait for this year's festival.
Thank you all for listening, and strive for excellence.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.